this is Bria, and I'm filling in for Patsy at Joy on Paper Radio. And we just had an incredible interview with G.S. Jensen, author of Medusa Falling. And we are now going to be talking to a science fiction author that, if you've been reading science fiction for any amount of time, you have heard this name, Alan Dean Foster. He will be calling in, I believe, in about 1 minute. So I am going to just give you a little bit background on the book that I just got to read by playing. We're going to have Big Ed play the science fiction book buzz. It's a review of Prodigals. Go ahead, Big Ed.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2022 first contact novel, Prodigals, by Alan Dean Foster, with stellar narration by Fred Berman. Now, let's download the book buzz. Extraterrestrial invaders make first contact and demand resources or threaten to attack major cities on Earth. Five representatives are sent to negotiate, including Devali Dev Mukherjee, a NASA consultant specializing in alien lifeforms. The requests for simple staples such as corn are easily met, and Dev is welcomed inside their alien spaceship to observe their advanced tech, such as food synthesizing equipment which delivers anything Dev requests. A variety of alien species work together on board with hundreds of automatons, but no one can tell Dev why a sudden alien emergency sends the spaceship out of the solar system with him and his companions on board. When the captain refuses to return them to Earth, Dev searches the ship for answers, and he uncovers secrets their captors have been hiding. A chance discovery leads Dev to a moral dilemma, and he's left questioning everything he knows, while the group looks to him to find a way to get them safely home. But he fears none of them will ever see Earth again. Alan Dean Foster is the acclaimed author of movie tie-ins for Star Wars, Alien, and Transformers. He was awarded the IAMTW Grand Master Scribe Award in 2008. He is also a best-selling science fiction and fantasy author in his own right, including the popular Pip and Flinks novels and the founding of the Commonwealth series. Besides traveling, he enjoys listening to both classical music and heavy metal. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
And we're back. So you got a little glimpse into Prodigals by Alan Dean Foster. And we have got him on the line. Hello, Alan.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I am doing wonderful. I am thrilled to talk to you. Your name is a name that I have known for a long time. And I'm so thrilled I finally got a chance to pick up one of your books. And now I can't wait to pick up a lot more of your books. But we're going to start just by talking about Prodigals before we get into a lot of the other things that you've done. So Prodigals was your most recent book release. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And I had so much fun reading that book. The first contact with aliens starts off very much as almost like some might expect. The alien spaceship comes hovering over a certain area, and the folks who are, you know, the people they decide who are going to be the communicators get sent. And we've got Mukherjee, who is basically our protagonist here. We've got several characters, but he is the guy that we're following most closely. And his journey to essentially into space with these aliens, I just thought, it's so cleverly devised where the reader gets taken on this adventure into outer space, meeting these different aliens, and then, but the conflict is, are they ever going to make it home? At least that's the very first conflict. Can you tell us a little bit about where did this story idea come from? Where did the idea kind of start? Was it a story you just had in you for a while, or did it just kind of pop into your head one day and you sat down and wrote it and it was kind of no big thing?
Well, I'm always looking for new ideas, and it occurred to me one day when I was looking for a new idea that I had never done an alien invasion story.
Ah.
But when I start a story, I I'm thinking I don't want to repeat the obvious or something that somebody else has done. Now, you can't read every book story in the field, so you don't know if you're repeating it, but I'm pretty sure that the idea that kind of hits about midway through the book is not one that somebody has done before. And as you described it, what you get at the beginning of the book is a fairly standard-looking alien invasion story with a few little differences and twists. And then when the reader, hopefully, has settled into what they think is going to be your usual alien invasion story, it takes a completely different tack. And then, of course, towards the end of the book, it takes a completely different tack again. So the idea was to do an alien invasion story that was different and try to surprise the reader not once but twice. I hope the book pulls that off.
The twists and turns, yes, I was surprised. I was that reader. I was your target. I thought we're going this direction, aren't we? Oh no, we're not. We're going a totally different direction, and I had to start sharing with people like, you need to read this book. Like, I need to talk to some people about what's going on here. And one of the things that I really enjoy is kind of that even just the exploration of the ship. They get into this ship, and there is essentially, you get the idea there's this endless supply of what they need. So they can kind of tap the ship and say, hey, I need a cheeseburger, and they can get it. And so that, I thought that was such an intriguing idea, because that begs so many questions. But these characters are essentially, they're kind of like political prisoners almost. Like they're kind of treated well, but they're not really wanting to be there. So they don't get to ask all the questions that you would ask if you were on this exploration with the aliens, not as a unwitting, you know, passenger that wasn't planning to be on this journey. So there is this very clever way that you bring about some of the tech and what, for example, what would you have asked for if you were on that ship?
An explanation of why I was on that ship. That's what I would have asked for, but the answer, you wouldn't get a straight answer because of the way the plot develops. There would be obfuscation and avoidance, and the people, the aliens who are holding you, wouldn't give you a straight answer. We find out why, of course, later on in the story. But if you're talking about food or general things like that, I probably would have been different than everybody else. And you start exploring. If you have tech, you're talking about the tech. A lot of science fiction doesn't pay attention to the details of tech. It's like, would you ask for a toothbrush when there's a better way of taking care of your teeth? Now, you don't have time to go into all that exposition in a standard novel, but I'm always thinking about it because the subject comes up in the story. You have to be prepared to explain it in a logical and rational way. And that's the problem with a lot of science fiction. People, particularly film science fiction, nobody pays any attention to the small details. And I'm very big on small details. If you went back to, say you were making a trans-Pacific journey in the early 19th century on a whaler, the tech would be very different. And what you might expect and what you might have to actually use would be extremely different than a lot of the things that you would accept as ordinary and standard in your everyday life wouldn't even exist. So you'd have to learn how to cope. And then the reverse is true. You would have, in the book, in that kind of a situation, access to tech that we don't have now. It would be a learning process. But I love paying attention to the little details without going on and on about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do it so beautifully in this book. And the ethical dilemmas that come up, I mean, those things where they're between the five characters, they're debating. Now, should we do this? Should we do that? And one of the characters in particular has this idea of maybe a way to make some money through all of this when all said and done. And the group has this incredible debate where most of them are not on board with this one character's idea. And then our protagonist, Mukherjee, is kind of tossed back and forth, kind of not sure what he thinks. And he's trying to figure it out. And so in many ways, it seems like stories like the one you're telling, it's this wonderful adventure into the unknown with these aliens, but then ethical dilemmas arise, and there's this the turn and twist that you were just talking about, the twist and turn. Suddenly we're kind of refocused and laser focused on a very human question: is this right or is this wrong? What thoughts were you having as you were writing some of those scenes where there's this great debate going on between these characters? Alan, I think we lost you for just a second. Are you still there? Oh,
I
can hear you. I can hear you now. So go ahead and start over that answer. Yeah. We missed the answer.
If all your characters act and believe the same thing, agree on how to do everything, but then how they...
We're having a little bit of signal interference. And Alan, I'm not sure if you're in a stationary place or if.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I can hear you now. I can hear you now.
Okay.
Now we'll try. It's clear as a bell. Go right ahead. So sorry, we missed the majority of that answer.
No, it's all right. This has been a lot of heavy weather out here, getting a lot of heavy weather back where you are.
And the
signals aren't perfect. And there's a story there.
There is a story there. This is this is all part of it.
From? you might have an important general somewhere trying to direct something on a battlefield, and the signal keeps getting interrupted, and you only get certain words from the people at the front line. Completely changes the thrust of battle. So there's a story there too, just real quick. But the people in the book, they're different people, they're different ages, they come from different backgrounds, and they're not all going to think the same way. And very often, when you meet people, you think you have them figured out. But when something significant happens in your life or their lives or in the world around you, they may act in a very different way from what you anticipate. And when you do that in story, then you make the reader sit up a little bit and say, oh, wait a minute, I didn't think that Bill there was going to do that. Why did he do that? And then, of course, you have to explain why Bill did whatever he did. But you get character development. Otherwise, it's very boring both for the writer and the reader. So when I was putting all these characters together in different situations, as you would do in any good story, you have to show they're going to react in different ways, and maybe in ways that you don't expect.
And I love that explanation, because even as we were having technical difficulties, you were finding a story in there, and you had a character in your mind appear. The general is off doing something, and that I hope the writers who are listening are paying attention, because we, those of us who love to write, we can find stories wherever we are, and if we just observe a little bit, if we look around, if we notice what's happening, even with the technology that we currently have, and all sorts of types of stories can be told, and then you grab a character, and you make that character the one who's... the story, you know, is taking place with a character, and suddenly you can take off with your own book, and you have been taking off with books since the 70s. Is that right? You started your first novels were back in the early 70s or prior to that?
No, that's correct.
Correct. Okay. And you have such a catalog. So for those who want to explore more of your writing beyond just your most recent release, Prodigals, which I would say, reader, get out there, grab it. It's a great book. You also have multiple best-selling series out there, including some other standalones. And I couldn't help myself. I am currently, I know you can't see me, but for those who are watching on YouTube, I am wearing a Star Wars shirt. And I couldn't talk to you without mentioning that I personally love the original trilogy of Star Wars. My dad is the one who brought Star Wars into our home, and I grew up watching it on a projector. My dad had a projector that he would project onto our wall when I was a kid. And oh, somehow there's a theme of music playing right now. And of course, talking to you, I had to ask about some of the Star Wars novelizations that you've been a part of. Now that I've read Prodigals, I have picked up Splinter of the Mind's Eye and just started reading it. I am already hooked. I cannot wait to read more of these. Tell us a little bit. You have been in the science fiction world for a long time. Tell us a little bit about what it was like back then. You got to talk to George Lucas about his vision for Star Wars before it even went beyond the first movie, and that's where Splinter of the Mind's Eye came in, correct?
Well, yes and no. George's idea was that if the first film was not a big success or a complete failure, he would be able to do a sequel film on a low budget. And he wanted to have something available, not only as the basis for a low-budget film, but to feed the hoped-for desire of incipient Star Wars fans.
Mm.
So when I signed the contract, it was for two books. It was the novelization of the film and then a sequel novel. And the only restriction that was put on me to coming up with the story for the sequel novel was that it could be filmed on a low budget. That's why I set it on a fog-shrouded planet, and a lot of it takes place underground. It would cut down on the need for expensive backgrounds. There was, of course, no CGI back then. Everything was physical. And I was given pretty much a free hand with Splinter of the Mind's Eye, with that one exception, and also the fact that I could not use the character of Han Solo because Harrison Ford had not come aboard for any sequel projects. And no Han Solo sort of meant to me no Chewbacca, although this has all changed subsequently in so many ways. But at the time, that's the way it was. So the book features Luke and Leia, a bunch of other characters that I conjured, and an appearance by Darth Vader.
Uh-huh.
We don't know who is, because I was writing Splinter of the Mind's Eye before the film was released.
And you
had no idea where.
You did not know personally at the time either, correct? That he was, well, spoiler, everybody, he's Luke's father. So you were not aware of that as you're writing your book?
No. There were a number of things that had not been solidified in the Star Wars, what was to become the Star Wars universe. There's no Star Wars universe with the first film and the first sequel book.
Correct.
There's
just
a film. So I didn't have any background material for anything that was presumed to happen 20 years in the future.
Sure.
And that was how I was, that's how I was able to write what I was able to write. As far as Darth Vader being Luke's father, everybody has their opinions about something like Star Wars that has become such a part of our culture, and hindsight is a wonderful writing tool, and people would go back, and people have gone back and rewritten things more to their own personal liking. But that's good. It's like somebody giving you a big Lego set and with no instructions, and you get it. And you build whatever you want instead of trying to follow some kind of a preset book of instructions. And that's what I did with Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
And it's a wonderful thing. I have a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old now. He's 6, and he loves Star Wars. I cannot wait to he's seen the movies, the original 3, and I can't wait to introduce him to some of these books. And I'm thrilled that I could one day hand him your book and say, "Hey, read this. You're gonna love it." And tell us a little bit about some of your other series. You have so many novels. What do you have, any favorites you would love the readers to be aware of? Do you have any you're currently working on that you can share with us?
Well, there are 2 novels that are not yet out. One is called Secretions, which is part of my Commonwealth Universe series. And I wanted to write a book that, bearing in mind what I said earlier about paying attention to the technical details, I wanted to create a world where the life forms were essentially based on slime. That may not sound very attractive, but hopefully it reads differently. And there's a fantasy novel called Himder the Bear. I just felt one day like I'm going to have some fun here. And it's a fairly standard, at least standard by my the approaches I take, fantasy novel. Mm-hmm. So there are those. There's a short horror novel coming out, Lovecraftian horror novel for people who know H.P. Lovecraft,
mm-hmm.
called Moaning Words, which will be out from a small press later this year. And as far as things that I would like people to read, I have a particular fondness for an early book called Midworld. And when people ask, as they do, you know, what should I read of yours if I've never read anything of yours?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I often recommend one of my short story collections. There are a bunch out there. And I figure if you don't like this story, maybe you'll like the next story. And some of them are science fiction and some of them are fantasy. But there's a variety there. And I always think if you're preparing to encounter a new author you haven't read before and they do write short stories, that's a really good way to get an introduction to them because...
Oh, absolutely, yes.
To quote a certain film, you know.
And I'm so sorry, Alan, we're losing you once again.
Okay.
Oh, I think I hear you again. Okay, go ahead.
The saying that if you like one story, maybe you like the next one.
Yes.
It's a good way to find out. I always felt that was sad that whatever earlier writers,
And I think we've lost you again, but I heard a little bit of what you're saying. Focusing on some of the short stories can help introduce the writing style and can get people into your books. And then you mentioned Midworld from the Commonwealth series as a great starting point. That book that kicks off the Human X Commonwealth series is a great starting point. And we are just about out of time. So, Alan, where can people go to follow you on social media to find out what's happening in your world?
I have a very cool website full of information. So is that it?
And I'm gonna say the name of the website because for some reason this robotic sounding thing is persistent. The general is out there doing what he's doing. Okay, so the website fantasticfiction.com. That's yours,
no.
Correct?
No, that's not my website.
Oh, that's not your website.
That's
okay.
Mine is don'tbeshot@alanfoster.com.
Alan, let me get back to Alan Dean Foster. Okay, so people can follow you at your name, alandeanfoster.com.
It's a good place for researching stories, publications, and other information. Where I post frequently is, well, there's a Facebook fan page that one of the publishers and I maintain.
Okay, Facebook is a great place to follow you. So I follow you there. It's the Facebook fan page, right? Okay, yep. So if you're on Facebook, you can follow Alan Dean Foster right there. And thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you coming on to Joy on Paper and just giving us a little piece of some of the things that you've been a part of. It's such an honor to talk to you. And I'm so sorry that the machine is trying to block us, but there is a story there for sure. So thank you, Alan. I appreciate you coming on, and we'll have to talk again soon when your next book comes out. We'd love to have you back. All right. Bye-bye now. Okay. So, oh, what an incredible author. Talking to Alan Dean Foster, he is a wealth of knowledge in the sci-fi realm. There are very few sci-fi fans who are not well aware of his books, of what he's been a part of. He's done novelizations for the Alien franchise, for Star Trek, for Star Wars. So, what a privilege to get to talk to him. And so, if you are a writer, I hope you will get out there and get writing. I hope this show has encouraged you, our science fiction themed show for today, has encouraged you to look around, observe, see what might not look quite right. There could be a story there. And for those who are readers, we've got some wonderful books to recommend to you. Alan Dean Foster's Prodigals and G.S. Jensen's Medusa Falling. So Patsy will be back for her regular Joy on Paper this Thursday. So we look forward to chatting with you again soon. And there will be another science fiction themed show in the coming days. So I will keep you posted. If you want to follow me at www.briaburton.com, I am on Facebook as Bria Burton, and I have a writer page that you can follow. And I'm also on Twitter/X, whatever it's called these days. And you can find me at Bria Burton. And I'm also on Instagram. So thank you, dear listeners, for joining us for this incredible show, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye now.